It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But Decrell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 113.
Rehashing the urban fantasy debate because we feel like it.
That's your tagline?
Yes, that's my tagline.
You should have just gone like with something like urban fantasy. It's not like Khal Drogo rapes everyone in every fantasy.
That would also be a perfectly acceptable tagline. However, it's not mine.
I'm glad that some people found that amusing. Yeah. Yes. Nobody will understand the context of that because we had a conversation off show.
Yes, we did. But,
okay, so...
But we did anyway.
Yeah. So, anyway, so... today's episode is obviously about urban fantasy. We're going to attempt to debate a definition for what urban fantasy is, which means we're going to disagree, and in the end we won't actually have a workable definition because that's not how defining things works. So in some ways, this podcast is completely useless.
Totally, yeah, completely useless, yes.
But we're going to do it anyway.
Exactly. Mostly because Paul is just adorable, and he wanted to do this. Isn't that right, Paul?
Yes.
I've been thinking about urban fantasy all day. Seriously, crossed my heart for another project too. So I have my thinking cap on and ready to go.
Oh wow! Like I only started thinking about it like a minute before we started recording. Totally. Unfair.
I've been thinking about urban fantasy all my life.
No, you haven't.
No, I really haven't, because I only started reading it in the mid '90s. So I suppose.
Yeah. Okay, so let's figure out a kind of a format. So let's find out what we all think urban fantasy is. So we're going to start with Paul, because then that way I can disagree with everything he says.
Do we need to have the introduction part of this whole thing anymore?
Oh, I'm sorry.
So many of us have been on here about a million times.
Stina Light is obviously here.
Yay, I'm here. Okay.
She's practically like a guest host on this show now.
And coincidentally, author of something that some people will disagree is urban fantasy.
And that some people, enough, of course, is Paul Weimer, who is actually a guest host. Well, you're not even a guest host. You're officially a host.
I'm not on the webpage yet.
Yeah, you are. I put you on.
Did you? I didn't see that.
Yeah, you're on there.
Ha!
You are? Congratulations!
Yeah, he's officially on our show, so hopefully his presence will help us get a Hugo.
Yeah, because I had to go get a
If not, we're firing you, man. Anyway, so that's who's on the show. So let's start with Paul. What does Paul think urban fantasy is?
Urban fantasy is fantasy set in a facsimile or close parallel to our own real world, usually in an urban environment, and usually at the time it's set, usually in the present or near present of the world, i.e., for example, War for the Oaks was written in the 80s and was set in the 80s. That's urban fantasy. However, say Thief Taker by D.B. Jackson is set in Boston, but it's in the 18th century Boston. To me, that's not urban fantasy. In addition, urban fantasy should include the presence of supernatural creatures of some type, be it vampires, werewolves, angels, fae, what have you.
Talking monkeys?
Talking monkeys in an urban fantasy in a city would be urban fantasy, yes.
Okay. I'm gonna do that now.
I think it's an unexplored niche.
So just to play on this, so would you consider Planet of the Apes to be urban fantasy? I know you're gonna say no, but it's a joke. So
no.
I know
that is a science fiction basis.
Well, science fiction is a there's not a lot of science.
Next.
Anyway, so that's your definition, Paul.
That's my working definition. I'm willing to be persuaded otherwise.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I think there's a subset emerging called historical urban fantasy, and that's where. Oh crud! I can't remember a pseudonym. That's where the book that Paul was discussing.
Oh, D.B. Jackson, yeah.
Yes, D.B. Jackson. I hear feedback.
No, you're good.
Okay.
You're good.
Good. So anyway, I feel like there's a subset called historical urban fantasy, and that's where that ends up.
Okay, so instead of saying that you would define urban fantasy as including that, but that would be like a subgenre of urban fantasy.
Yeah, that's how I look at it.
Okay.
Because I've heard my stuff referred to as historical urban fantasy, although I have a hard time referring to the 1970s as history.
Okay, so Stina, do you disagree at all with Paul's definition, or do you just want to enhance it by adding different subcategories that go beneath it?
I don't disagree with his definition. I would like to add the subcategory that there is historical urban fantasy, of which D.B. Jackson's work falls in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Paul, do you disagree? Do you think that it's fair to include subcategories?
I think that D.B. Jackson's work is historical fantasy and not urban fantasy. Urban fantasy for me has to take place relatively close to the present of the author's writing.
Okay, well, now I need to know why, because in your definition, you place a lot of emphasis on this particular element, right? That has to be contemporary to contemporaneous to the author's living time period, roughly speaking. Some, like, well, I guess you give like a variation, like a plus or minus 3 years or something. But what for you is the rational basis for why urban fantasy has to contain that?
Well, for me, urban fantasy is our world transposed onto with supernatural elements. Reading an urban fantasy, I can imagine myself walking out of my apartment and into this urban fantasy world. So it has to take place within relatively recent memory. I know Stina's books are a borderline case for me because they do take place in living memory, but I was in single digits at the time and didn't know Belfast from a hole in the wall. D.B. Jackson's work, on the other hand.
Living memory? Is that what counts? I'm just asking.
Well, the living memory of the time when the novel was published. In 30 years, War for the Oaks will still be urban fantasy, even though the world has moved on because it's...
But in 30 years, my books won't be?
Yours is going to turn more into historical fantasy. Just like alternate histories that changes in history can become alternate histories. Like futures can become alternate histories as history doesn't follow that course. Robert Heinlein's.
Well, but now you got a contradiction.
Okay. Now, so I totally disagree with you now.
Yeah. Here's where there's a contradiction, because if your definition is that it remains urban fantasy because it's contemporaneous to the author's time and it's within living, reasonable memory, so it wouldn't be like if they're would you well I'll say side like that, but you say that science fiction, which presents a future that we then reach, and it does. So, like, say, 2001 Space Odyssey, right? We reach 2001, and obviously nothing in 2001 is even remotely true, right? That somehow that now becomes alternate history.
Yes.
So, I guess this seems like there's a problem, because then wouldn't all urban fantasy at some point become alternate history and not urban fantasy? Because at some point we're going to hit a stage in which the politics that the author's writing about are no longer...
Relevant,
maybe not relevant, it's not quite the right word I'm looking for, but they're no longer particular to the piece, because maybe, like, say, because I'm guessing for you, urban fantasy to some extent is, it's not just transplanting our world onto it, it's also transplanting some of the politics of our world or some of the issues of our world into this fantastic setting of an urban environment. And so those things, of course, history changes. You know, I might write a short story about I don't know, voter issues, right? And then maybe in 5 years, that'll be completely irrelevant because maybe we solved it in one way or another way, right? So I guess my question is, how are you then rationalizing that? This is going to be a Tack Paul day, I think, so.
Yeah, I totally disagree. I just feel like the definition of urban fantasy is fantasy that takes place in an urban setting.
Right. And I have to interject one thing, because according to Paul's definition, it has to be sort of a recognizable space that you walk into. Like, you could walk out your front door and still, and if you're taking out even the political characteristic, there are a number of urban fantasies that take out the political characteristics of our modern world. For instance, the Rachel Morgan series, which are sort of in some senses have an alternate history facet to it, because it goes back a period of time in which, you know, suddenly everybody knows, like, the worlds combine or something. I forget how it works exactly. But the political landscape is completely different from our own. The same thing happens in
Charlene Harris's books. The same thing happens.
Right.
Like, all the wares and so forth, and the vampires come out, you know, and everybody suddenly knows that they are real. And
exactly.
Yeah.
The Anita Blake series does the same thing. I mean, it's a completely, to me, those worlds, except for the, you know, like, I, yes, Chicago probably looks exactly the same in both worlds, but besides that, nothing else is particularly, you know, it's not like I could walk out my front door and see that world, or, you know, open up a newspaper and see that world. In that sense, they're completely unrecognizable. Granted, I do have to talk in Paul's defense about setting that it has to be contemporary, only because in Sean's mind, science fiction cannot be science fiction unless it takes place in the future. So, you know,
it has to be set in the future. Sorry.
Wow.
He's very strict on this. So
the future of the author's present. Let me be really clear. So
okay,
I don't do what Paul does, where like we get past 2001 and suddenly it's alternate history. I still consider it science fiction.
I do too.
But only because I'm basing it off of the author's, the creator's contemporary moment.
Yeah, and the author's intention, I think,
is to write a future story, something set in a future. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, that's a side.
But anyway, it's a whole other thing.
Sorry, Jen.
Sorry.
Still disagree completely with that, but
You're wrong, and we already learned.
Obviously, I am wrong on everything, but
yeah, you can't even spell Targaryen. You can't even say Targaryen right. So
Targaryen,
it's not Targaryen. It's Targaryen.
But I think it is interesting that there is, you know, such kind of a disconnect between, like, if you go to Wikipedia, for instance, Wikipedia, and granted, obviously not the end-all be-all of, you know, definitions, but
sure,
it is interesting that if you go to Wikipedia, for instance, it just says that it has to be an urban setting. If you go to other websites, you know, that are often set in contemporary times and of course always contain supernatural elements, but it doesn't matter what time period that it takes place. In fact, they actually even concede that urban fantasies can take place in the future and still not be science fiction. Well, obviously, you know, there's not a lot of ghosts in science fiction, so that might have something to do with it. Unless you're talking Ghost in the Machine.
Or Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, there's Philip K. Dick.
Yep.
And there's what's the name of that film that's set on a spaceship and it's
Solaris?
No, the other one.
Event Horizon?
Event Horizon,
yes. Yeah, that's not science fiction.
That's a haunted house in space for sure.
No, it's science fiction.
It's fiction.
How is it science fiction? Other than fact that it takes place on a spaceship.
Because of the explanation. The explanation for why
those
things
happen.
Okay,
right? So that's true. There's no supernatural element to the eventual reveal of, you know, what the ghosts are.
I mean,
whatnot,
it's still kind of supernatural, but only in the sense it's like things that we don't quite understand. But we understand that there is, at least in this particular universe, some scientific basis for it.
Right. And
even if it's not explained.
My thing with urban fantasy is that there is almost never a scientific basis for it. So I concede I have to specify almost never, because if you go with Charlene Harris's theory, Charlene Harris. God, sorry. If you go with her series, she actually posits that there is some sort of scientific, depending on if you're watching the show or reading the books too, because I think the books, the show kind of went off on a weird.
It did.
That she still has fairies. But the vampires, Am I talking Charlene Harris or I'm talking Laurel K. Hamilton now? I don't remember which. Laurel K. Hamilton definitely has a scientific element to it. Charlene Harris also does, which is why they're able to discover, you know, a sort of the replacement for blood and everything. I don't know if that you could necessarily consider the creation of the vampires scientific, but she leaves it up to interpretation. So, but still, supernatural and urban. Those, to me, are the only two requirements to urban fantasy. I don't require that it take place now. I don't require that it not take place in the future.
Right.
You know, so to me, there's actually a much broader category of books that are urban fantasy.
Yeah.
I haven't read The Thief Taker, and
I haven't read The Thief Taker yet, but it's definitely on my list of things to read.
So I could see that there are certain books that have urban fantasy elements, but overall aren't necessarily an urban fantasy, and are more likely to fall within like the historical fantasy subset of things. Hmm. And this is where you get into the super blurry boundaries of, well,
I think a lot of the reason why this is so confusing for so many people is because writers as artists, we have to go out and we have to combine things in different and new ways. That's our job. And if you do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again, it becomes boring and formulaic, and nobody wants that. So writers tend to push those boundaries constantly, so it's a moving target.
Yes. Oh, absolutely agreed. And I think it's interesting too, though, that you kind of have to look at the current definition of urban fantasy as a product of Paul's definition of urban fantasy.
Poor Paul.
As a product of the books that led into urban fantasy as its own genre. So, and I personally would include Anne Rice in that.
She's urban fantasy, of course.
You would include her Vampire Chronicles in urban fantasy?
Yeah, some of them. And not necessarily the entire series, because
see, I wouldn't. I would put it in horror.
Oh, or horror, right. But if I'm iffy on horror in the first place. So
okay, at the very least, then we can all agree that it's maybe proto-urban fantasy. when was the earliest Rice book written? A while ago?
80-something.
Oh, urban fantasy.
I've got it right here.
Yeah.
One second. Oh, 76. Yeah. Interview with the Vampire was 1976.
Yeah,
and Vampire Lestat was 85. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, some of them I would put into urban fantasy, because I wouldn't necessarily say some to me are definitely go back to historical. At least parts of it do, because if you look at like The Queen of the Damned, which takes place both in a contemporary urban setting, although I'm not saying that contemporary needs to be there, but also covers a long history. Yeah. And Interview with the Vampire, Interview with the Vampire, I'd be perfectly happy putting into an urban fantasy classification, because every single part takes place in an urban setting.
Yeah, but it's horror.
But it's horror. So
I don't understand why is there such a big distinction?
Hashing out what horror is a completely different podcast.
Right.
And I have opinions on that you could all attack me for, but I perhaps should not express them right now. We could save that for another time.
Now I feel awful. I feel bad for Paul. Paul, I'm sorry.
Paul knew this was going to happen.
He totally did. Because it happened the last time we talked about it. We completely disagreed on it. But
exactly. We destroyed
all that. Well, if we all agreed, it would be a boring conversation to begin with. But
exactly.
And Paul would feel attacked, because I like Paul.
We all love Paul, and he knows that we love him, so he's okay with the fact that we're attacking his definition. We're not attacking the man. We're attacking the man's opinion.
Right, because if we were really attacking you, Paul, we would just, God, Paul's just a moron. He doesn't know what Paul is talking about. He probably eats fish brains, and he's a weirdo, and he's going to vote for...
You know, fish brains are probably really healthy. Lots of, you know...
Protein.
Protein and...
So I have a question then.
Yes.
Going back to topic. If urban fantasy takes place in a urban setting, does it have to be an urban setting on Earth, or not?
Yes. No. Wait.
Yes.
It depends what you mean by an urban setting has to take place on Earth. What do you mean?
For example, suppose I wrote a fantasy that took place primarily in a city in another universe.
Okay, but it's fantasy? Still following the traditions of fantasy, so it's not like a science fiction.
Correct.
Right. Oh, okay, so...
Yeah, that's not urban fantasy, no.
Well,
no, yes,
here,
it is. Yeah.
Wait,
no.
Yes, because Sean and I have talked about this before. Because both of us, I believe, I could be totally putting words in Sean's mouth right now, that Lowtown is an urban fantasy.
See, here's the deal.
I would say arguably it's urban fantasy.
Yes.
I won't say definitively because I think it has definitely obvious examples of urban fantasy in it. But anyway, Stina, go ahead.
Here's how I feel about urban fantasy. I mean, urban fantasy at its very beginning consisted of authors taking myth, and instead of setting it in a distant place or a distant time, placing it in an urban, modern kind of setting. And that was the main intent. A realistic setting and then running the supernatural elements, the mythological elements, running it underneath the modern setting. So it had a hidden quality to it. It also tended to have musical roots to it as well. Like Wharf the Oaks has a punk connection, and often it did have a punk connection.
Right.
Those are the roots. Now, there are all kinds of things that tear off in all kinds of different directions where people have taken horror and romance and then smooshed it together and then put it in an urban setting and then kept that secretive element to it. Mm. And that's okay. And then they branched out and said, okay, it doesn't have to be secretive anymore. And then do you see where I'm going here?
Yes. I think that's actually a great argument for what urban fantasy is. Sean and I, like we said, arguably Lowtown could be considered an urban fantasy because of its city setting. But I think that you're absolutely right in that the vast majority, if not all of the things that people automatically recognize as urban fantasy, well, close to automatically recognize as urban fantasy, or are willing to accept as parts of urban fantasy, are those sort of myths of Earth, that
myths of Earth applied to Earth.
Applied to Earth, yes. I'm actually that makes complete sense to me. So
yeah,
I've been argued out of Lowtown being an urban fantasy. I think it does contain urban fantasy elements to it,
sure.
Or slash noir, but which I think intrudes on a lot of urban fantasy in the first place. So. There's that.
Right, love and urban fantasy are essentially detective stories, like Jim Butcher's novels.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are certain elements to Paul's argument that I totally agree with. I mean, I do agree that it has to be a recognizable Earth that we interact in order for it to count as an urban fantasy, I think, because the main intent was to take myth from long ago and apply it to our lives today and see how that worked out. So in my mind, I feel that my books are urban fantasy because I did take Irish myth and set it in a more modern era.
Right.
And try to see how that worked itself out and what interesting things happened when you applied those things together, because people do today live in that kind of, it's not like the United States. I mean, my theory is that the reason it's so very popular in the United States largely is because we have pretty much divorced ourselves from that aspect of our lives as human beings, Americans have. And that has my theory is that's less the case in Ireland. I don't know that for sure because I've not been there, but
one of these days.
One of these days. That's my impression.
And I like going off of that. I would argue that there's that a lot of like Hayao Miyazaki's films are urban fantasy because they're taking Japanese mythos and interjecting them into modern. Well, not even necessarily modern, but
no.
into recognizable Earth environments.
No, I disagree.
Fine.
Name one of Hayao Miyazaki's films that you would consider to be urban fantasy.
I haven't. There's one that I can't think.
Isn't Spirited Away one of those?
No.
Spirited Away, I wouldn't consider that only because she's taken fully out of
the urban setting. She's not even in an urban setting anymore. Yeah.
Gotcha.
She's in a country setting.
Gotcha.
My Neighbor Totoro is the same thing. They're not in a city. They're in a village.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, I was thinking of Totoro.
Quibbling!
So branching over that, Sean, would The Hum and the Shiver by Alex Bledsoe, which is set in rural Appalachia, not be urban fantasy? Although it deals with, it's in modern day, and it deals with contemporary myths intersecting with our lives. So just because of the location, does that disqualify it from urban fantasy?
Yes. Let me talk. You've had enough talk. You talked for like an hour already and said so many things that are wrong, like mispronouncing Targaryen.
Please, go on.
Yes, let Professor God. Sean get in on this a little bit.
Paul, I don't know how you're going to put up with this.
if your definition that you're about to embark on means that most of Charles de Lint is also not urban fantasy.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. I just wanted to...
Yeah.
Before you even go into your definition, I just wanted to mock it. So please, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but you cannot. This would be like okay. Hold on.
Charles de Lint as urban fantasy? Give me a break.
Okay. Hold on. I've never read Charles de Lint, but what I understand, a lot of his writing is set in rural settings, yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Therefore, it is not urban fantasy.
Then what is it? Suburban fantasy? Rural fantasy?
If you want to make those categories, go for it, but it's not urban fantasy.
Fantasy.
You cannot...
Can I
talk
God.
Now? Are you done, Jen?
No.
Go You're ahead. Not done? I'll mute you.
Sorry.
No, I think the problem is putting Lint in there, it doesn't take seriously what the term entails. You cannot say everything is urban fantasy just because it's contemporary and it includes fairies. That doesn't quite make sense.
Sorry,
so urban in fantasy is crucial and in explaining what urban fantasy is. It has to take place in an urban setting. Right, it cannot take place on a farm. It can't take place in the country.
They do, in fact, occur in cities. They do.
Which ones?
Charles de Lint?
All of them, they take place in cities.
They take place partly in cities.
A majority of them, yeah.
If they take place in cities, they're urban fantasy. Well, yeah.
No, but he does have many that are more of a, you know...
In between.
Yeah.
From cities, but they wander off into the country or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, things and like you, the Blue Girl is set in a city. I mean,
I haven't read most of Charles de Lint because I'm not actually a huge fan. Unfortunately,
yeah.
I know that means I'm like a traitor to fantasy or something.
Yeah, you
but,
are. You, but so am I. So what does it matter?
But there are things that was it a short story that we read? I don't remember what it was or a book. That takes place in an incredibly small town during, it's like Depression era.
Mm-hmm.
But there are, not fairies, there are sort of Irish mythos creatures in that story. But it's a very small town, and... It's about a kid that's kidnapped and whatnot, but it's all takes and he's switched to birth and whatever. It's that whole
Changeling.
You changeling, thank you. But it takes place in an incredibly small town. However, I would still classify that as an urban fantasy because it's still within like population basis.
That's fine, but this isn't the first time you've been wrong.
Oh, shut up.
No, I think that there is something very particular about the urban environment, a sensibility that is particular to the urban environment that is very different from the rural environment. And if you want to split them up and you want to maybe say, like, you take the contemporary fantasy genre and then you break it down and there's urban fantasy and there's rural fantasy, fine. Whatever you want to call it, that's fine. But it is very different in terms of its sensibility. It's dealing with a very different set of relations that I think is crucial to understanding what these things mean, right? That you can't say that usually genres, when we come up with these subgenres, we say that because there is a common link between them. So like cyberpunk, right? Most of the things that are identified as cyberpunk, they all share similarities, they share themes, they share particular sensibilities, right? Cyberpunk being a really great example because it's the only one I think that most people can agree has some sort of concrete identity, even though nobody knows what cyberpunk actually is. But like, and even something like steampunk, as steampunk has been now defined, right? It's all defined essentially by this alternate history vision of reality in which the steam engine outdoes the gas engine. It's the essential change that all steampunk follows, and then they just extrapolate about what that means in very different ways, right? So with urban fantasy, I think that the urban setting is the crucial component. It has to be the crucial component. Otherwise, what are we calling it, urban fantasy? We should call it something else. If we're going to say that Charles de Lint's rural settings share something in common with, I don't know, someone give me an example of...
Put her bark collar on!
What?
Is that a book?
I thought I was muted. I mean, I thought I was not muted. And so I turned my mic back off. And it turned out I was turning it on. I apologize profusely for that. I'm yelling at my family for not shutting my dog on.
Recorded and it's staying in. I also
wow.
Have
damn you all.
She yelled at her children, by the way. That was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, so your children have what colors, is what you're saying?
Yeah, the worst part is that I've been, like, interjecting things this whole time while I was on mute, because I'm a genius. So, no, I mean, really, that's why we're talking about this. I don't, the definition of urban fantasy. And yes, obviously the word urban is in there, so yada, 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 you know, it has to take place in a city. But I
think the definition is mushy, it's going to be mushy, that's just how it is.
I don't think they should be that mushy.
I think it should be a little mushy.
No, the mushy is the broader categories. When you're starting and getting into the more specific, because urban fantasy is a subgenre of fantasy. It's meant to be even more particular, right? And even urban fantasy is, in a lot of sense, would, at least with Paul's definition, you would have to consider it as part of contemporary fantasy, which is, again, even more specific. And so
the deeper you
get into something, the more specific and more contained it has to be. If we're going to say that there's such a thing as absolute definitions, I'm not convinced of that. But
does the entire
book have to take place
in a city? Because that means Charlene Harris's books are an urban fantasy.
I don't think they necessarily have to, but I think that the urban sensibility, the life that is produced out of living within cities, has to be a central component, even if it's in the background. So like if you take a character who spends their whole life living in a city and vampires living in the city, and then you send them to a farm and there's vampires on a farm, you could possibly argue that that's still urban fantasy because the central character is somebody from an urban environment, and then you're sticking them in sort of an alien situation. I use alien, I like little quotey things. But that's not necessarily, and that might even be true if you think of it the other way, right? You take like a rural character and you shove them into an urban setting, and their struggles to fit in into this urban setting are a central component. That's a possibility. I'm not sure. I'm not set on that, but okay, sure.
Okay, and here's my question: how big of a town do you consider urban?
That's a question that I've been chewing over since Sean expressed his opinion. I don't have a good answer for that. I do think when you start dwindling down from New York to Chicago to Omaha to Rockford, Illinois, you start losing something of the urban fantasy experience. But where that actually crosses over into rural, I'm not sure.
And does it necessitate a whole nother category of, you know, definition? I mean, well, for instance, okay, I live within a rural community. It's technically classified by the USDA or whatever group.
The USDA?
Not USDA.
They put a big stamp of approval.
U.S. Department of Agriculture. I believe that's the group. They define what parts of the United States are rural and which parts are urban. And the county that I live in is defined as rural, even though we have a town of 50,000 people here. So it technically makes it a city, but we're still considered rural. We only get certain benefits that are for rural communities, and actually we're in this weird spot where the USDA considers us rural, but like California doesn't, or maybe California considers us rural, but the feds don't. So we don't get some things, but we do get other things. So I mean, I think it's urban versus rural is a fuzzy enough definition on its own that quibbling about it in terms of what makes urban fantasy is next to useless.
Yeah, I would have to go with it because Newford is like the place where Charles Dillon sets a big chunk of his novels. If you go look him up, there's like a whole vastly huge number of novels are all set in Newford, which is
never even heard of it.
Made up town. It's a made up town.
It's a fictional
made up town, and that's where the Blue Girl is set, and you know, the Dream Place, and
how many people live there?
Spirits in the Wires. It's not a huge city from what I remember. I don't remember it being a giant city. It's a good sized city, you know, like Austin or whatever. It's not huge.
Austin's pretty big.
Well, compared to where you live, absolutely. Absolutely compared to where you live.
Yes, yes.
But yes, I mean, I don't know. I just think at a certain point it's kind of silly to get caught up in quibbling over the details, the fine lines and all like this. It's kind of a silly little argument. But
so I'm silly, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. I think you're silly.
Oh.
I think you're silly.
Oh,
well, just so you know, I'm never voting for you for a Hugo ever again.
Well, it's all right. I'll probably never come up for another one again.
Now.
Paul says.
We doubt that.
Anyway.
We have ultimate faith in Stina Liked.
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm starting to lose it.
Oh, fine, buddy. Just make me crawl through the phone line and strangle you with your telephone that you don't
Whoa.
Have.
Violent. I was just talking about taking away a Hugo from you. You're talking about murder. Damn, she's dark. No wonder she writes urban fantasy.
Wonder she kills off some characters. Anyway,
I'm looking up now. Newford.
Look up Newford. No, just look up Charles Dillon to Wikipedia.
You can actually find Newford
and
in Wikipedia.
Scroll down and you got the Newford series, right?
That's funny. Canadian readers tend to think of Newford as an American city, while Americans usually think of it as Canadian.
it's a made-up city, but it's, yeah.
Okay,
still a big city, though. So, still counts.
Yeah, it still counts. I mean, that's like a third of his work.
Sean's definition of urban.
Charles Lee does, in fact, count as urban fantasy.
Well, I guess I'm just sad that, you know, if I were to, because I'm going to go with Paul, well, I don't know if Paul was suggesting that it actually is, but I'm going to go with Paul and say that Alex Bledsoe's The Hum and the Shiver is urban fantasy, even if it takes place in the Appalachians.
I'm conflicted whether or not if it's urban fantasy or to go back to what Cena was doing with subgenres of urban fantasy, if it's urban fantasy and urban rural fantasy. I mean, it has a lot of the conventions of urban fantasy. It's got supernatural creatures. It's set contemporary, but it's just not set in Chicago, Omaha, or even Waterloo. It's set in rural Appalachia. The question is how important, and we've circled around that before and argued, how important is place to urban fantasy? Is the setting a character, and does you have need a certain critical mass of population to be urban fantasy. For example, as a hypothetical, suppose you had a fantasy set in, say, the palace in Moscow in 1900. And it's just set in the palace and you're dealing with Rusalka and Voldevoloy and all sorts of Russian creatures, but it's only set within the palace. Is that urban fantasy or not?
It's just in the palace and there's no mention of the outer city.
The outer city of Moscow or St. Petersburg, depending on which palace you go for, exists, but we never go there. We just stay within the palace. Is that urban fantasy?
Do the characters that populate this palace, do they have involvement in that city, or have they been self-contained within the palace their whole lives? I'm getting like really particular for some stupid reason, but
silly.
They would have connection because they rule Russia. They rule Moscow, St. Petersburg, and the rest of Russia. So yes, they have connection, but we never go there.
I would say yes, but that's a tentative, loose yes, because I would actually have to read that story.
Okay, guy, can I just quickly interject? So I decided to go with, you know, because we've been kind of quibbling about urban contemporary fantasy, you know, as it's connected to urban fantasy. What's interesting is that urban fantasy, I love Wikipedia only because you can tell how many people actually contribute to the things by, you know, the fact that they disagree so often. So in this one, urban fantasy is a subgenre of contemporary fantasy, which is, you know, interesting to say the least. It also counts something that, you know, it's like, obviously this is a subgenre, maybe, but it, you know, goes through examples of what is contemporary fantasy, and things like the Dresden Files are put in as just contemporary fantasy.
Urban fantasy.
That's urban fantasy.
Exactly. And then there's another one that I automatically was like, yeah, no, that's urban fantasy. Oh, Night Watch with Day Watch and Twilight Watch and Final Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, also, that's urban fantasy.
And I'm like,
too.
That's urban fantasy.
Urban fantasy.
Right. So
dark urban,
you know,
fantasy, but it's, yeah. Sorry. Playing on Steena. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't believe things that have to be contemporary, but the question is, what's the difference between just contemporary and urban fantasy in that sense? So is Alex Bledsoe's Tufa series, including The Hum and the Shiver, is that just contemporary fantasy?
Well, it's probably some kind of other, I'm sure someone will come up with some other subgenre that they stick in, right? But because that's what we do in this, like, we keep having these arguments like the genre thing and definitions are dumb, and it's like, yeah, well, but our community can't shut up about it, so
no, we
well,
love them.
Part of it, well, it's good to have handles because they're easier to shop with, right?
They are, right? And if somebody says, like, I really like urban fantasy, you can say, oh, well, then you might like X, Y, and Z, right? It
exactly.
helps in some sense with the conversation. Because we
right.
can recommend titles and actually talk about titles in it. And of course, even if we don't come up with a sure definition of what urban fantasy is, to some extent, the muddled definition, everybody understands it. So if I say urban fantasy, people go, oh, okay, like Charlene Harris and, you know, some people. They understand on some level what
that
is.
They have some definition of what it is. Exactly.
Right.
So, I mean, to me, I'm like on the fence on the whole label thing. The part of me that's the bookseller says, yes, the labels are necessary and intrinsic to the business. People need to be able to find whatever it is that they like. And the easiest, they have to have some sort of signpost to get there. And that's what those labels are for.
Here's a question for you, though, Steena. Where are your books currently placed in a bookstore?
Well, they don't have urban fantasy sections in bookstores. They have paranormal
romance. Yeah, they have paranormal romance sections. They have the science fiction and fantasy section.
Which always drives me crazy.
And that's
because I want my science fiction and my fantasy broken out into two freaking categories. Damn it.
Never going to happen.
Well, personally, I don't mind that they're pushed together, frankly. I don't mind at all because I feel that most of the people who read fantasy also read science fiction.
That's true, but when I go to a bookstore and I'm like, God, I'm really in the mood for science fiction, and then I have to plug through about 1,000 books that all have similar covers, even if they're science fiction or fantasy, it really is kind of obnoxious.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Jen. This conversation we're having where we're pointlessly trying to define urban fantasy, can you imagine
the debate and anger of all over all the books being categorized as sci-fi or fantasy. Like, because just think about like the Golden Age, right?
Yeah.
Of science fiction.
How many books will actually end up like on the fence in that particular?
Yeah.
It would be nuts.
You just have to create a section like we have no fucking idea.
We have no idea.
It's one or the other. Just have.
So really, I really don't have a problem with them being shelved together. I think it's a fabulous thing. It's a good thing. One influences the other anyway. We cross pollinate like mad. That's what it's for. Yeah. But yeah, there's that part of me that is, yes, in favor of all. And then there's the artist in me that's like, well, those are the things that we push against. And I have to admit that without those boundaries to push against, it would be a lot more difficult to be creative, I think. I think it's an important – boundaries are important partially for that reason so that we can push against them.
Okay,
react back to them.
Mm-hmm.
I had to – because obviously if you walk into a bookstore, there aren't any categories. But Amazon breaks theirs down into fairly small categories.
They try, but usually those categories turn out to – it's the same with Barnes & Noble. When I go surfing on there, they have a lot of little subcategories and genre
subcategories.
Fiction, but they're actually meaningless. They don't actually subcategorize very well.
Well, right, except that it does give the consumer a way to find certain books. And urban fantasy being a super hot seller right now, that's kind of my question of why I asked Stina, although actually they just break it down to contemporary fantasy and they don't go any lower than that. If they did break it down and people could just go and say, oh, I wanted urban fantasy, and they can probably look for, and you know, there's lists everywhere what is and is not urban fantasy, or what is urban fantasy, so that people can go, oh, that isn't, if I like urban fantasy, therefore I might like this book, without having to ask a friend. Does that harm, in a sense, the people who are kind of skirting the edges of what people commonly understand as urban fantasy, like Stina's books, in terms of sales?
I feel like the online model for shopping is insufficient.
That's an understatement.
Yes. I do feel that way. Because for me, speaking as a reader, I prefer going to bookstores and going and interacting with the books and picking them off shelves and flipping through the pages and like doing that whole thing. That's part of the experience of shopping for a book. Trying to do that online is
laborious.
Yes. And
impossible.
Very,
it really
it's just,
is.
It's just not fun. It's just not fun. I prefer going to a bookstore and talking and interacting with a bookseller who knows a particular, that has a background particular section or whatever, and I enjoy speaking with them and finding out what their opinions are on what makes urban fantasy and all that stuff. These are the kinds of discussions that you cannot have in Amazon. I'm sorry, you just can't.
Yeah.
There is
agreed. However, for those of us that live in places that don't even have bookstores because we suck.
No, you don't suck. It totally sucks. No, you don't personally suck. The economy sucks, and yes. how everything has fallen out, and this whole concept that everything must be electronic sucks. I think that totally sucks.
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole different discussion. But
That's a different discussion.
Yeah, but at some point...
We need all of them, but yeah.
Yeah, at some point, someone is going to have to seriously reevaluate how books are sold to us online, and I don't think they've done that yet. I think because like my big problem with Barnes & Noble is it's impossible to – there's no way to differentiate between like the really cheap, crappy self-published books and maybe the stuff that's more professional quality. So you'll wade through pages and pages and pages of these just really crappy knockoff books and people making ebook editions of out of copyright books before you can get to any of the – you know, the newer stuff, the new ebooks released or whatever. And it just drives me, it drives me up the wall. I hate it.
I don't even bother trying to do that on Amazon anymore. I mean, surfing through Amazon? No, I have better ways of finding books
Right,
and
word of mouth, I think, yeah.
Word of mouth. It's what Steena suggests. I mean, it might be virtually, but I mean, I rely on other people to tell me about books.
I think that partially that's what bloggers are for. They're in a way they're taking the place of booksellers, but online.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about the books that they feel passionate about. That's a good thing, I think. I think that's an important thing. It serves a good function. But which leads to a whole other discussion about the whole paid reviews thing and blah, 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 blah.
We have gone way off topic.
Oh, yeah, we definitely have.
But I do think, I mean, the question is, how much do people, like, let's go stick with Amazon because it is still probably the biggest bookseller in the United States. The lists, for instance, like the lists that people create, like I find those useful occasionally. I'll go through, wander through them and be like, oh yeah, that looks like it might be good, you know, because it has like books, you know, if you like this one, you might also like that one, sort of thing. And it shows people of like minds or like tastes to your own. So I think those can be useful. And I don't see why, I mean, if we're going with, yes, obviously, categorization is difficult if you're breaking it down into smaller categories, for instance.
Yeah.
However, cross-categorization is probably the easiest thing you can freaking do online. I mean, it is so easy to place multiple tags on one book. So, Blood and Honey, obviously, it could be contemporary fantasy, urban fantasy, you know, mythic, not mythic, but the including myths, you know, some fairy tale. It could
I've
be
even
put
seen
into
historical
a,
fiction too.
Right, historical fiction. Right. So that's an easy thing to do. And why they haven't at this point, I'm actually kind of surprised, because I think people do go in. A lot of people have very specific tastes, or at a time they might have very specific things that they're looking for. I myself do that consistently. I'll be like, God, I'm really in the mood for such and such, X versus X. And I'll go online and I'll try to find books that fit that category. It's not exactly an easy thing to do at this point in time, but I try.
Angry Robot, I was thinking about tags I was going to mention. Angry Robot started to do that. I mean, I'm looking at the page for Seven Wonders, for example, by Adam Christopher, and it's filed under science fiction, heroes in action, a double cross, kapow, exclamation point, tables turned. I mean, I think their system needs a little work, but it's
because I need to cut a couple of those categories off.
They have a category kapow because it's a superhero novel.
Yeah,
I mean, I've read it, so I think their tagging needs a little work, but it could be a model forward for people to try to identify similar books. If you like Seven Wonders, you might like something else with superheroes, like say After the Golden Age by Gary Vaughan, or Jacqueline Carey's two novels with the superhero, for example. And it might provide that cross fertilization and getting people to find books based on similar strains.
Right. Exactly. I actually was recently looking for just books that were like Jacqueline Carey's Kushiel series, and had the hardest freaking time doing that without, you know, like throwing a shout out on the Twitterverse, and which was disappointing. And it's impossible when you just walk into a bookstore, unless you go to talk to the people. But granted, it's Barnes and Noble, and half the time they don't know what they're talking about. So.
Yeah.
So I really wish they did a better job of. Yeah, I know. I worked at Book People, and we were required to have our sections of the bookstore that we knew well, and that was part of getting hired. Do you have a particular section of do you have a particular genre you're interested in? And that was part of the application process.
Right.
If you didn't, then you probably didn't get hired. If you didn't read, you probably didn't get hired.
Right. It doesn't make sense to me when they hire people who don't read.
That makes me crazy. It just makes me crazy. Why are you working at a bookstore if you don't read?
It's like hiring a doctor who doesn't actually practice.
Exactly. Bookstores, more than anything, require in my opinion, require some type of categorization. If you have a, if it's a bookstore, you know, a brick and mortar, then you require people that know what they're, you know their section well enough to be able to say, you know, if somebody comes in and says, I like romantic historical fiction, they can say, oh, well, I can recommend this and this and this.
Exactly. That's what sets it apart from shopping online. I mean, otherwise, why? Right. Then I'm with everybody else. What's the point? Why not just shop online? Because you're not offering a service to the public anymore if you don't have somebody in the shop who's read, who knows and understands at least what a reader is all about.
Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, especially with urban fantasy, it's one of those things that people, you walk into a bookstore and you're like, okay, there's the paranormal romance section, which I'm sorry, is not urban fantasy, even though a large amount of urban fantasy does contain romance and sex and everything else. Obviously, Laurel K. Hamilton being the stellar example of porn turn into urban fantasy. But
hey, there's a better example now, though. Fifty Shades of Grey.
Right. Well,
not a
fantasy, though.
Yeah, no.
It's not a fantasy. Well, I'm talking specifically porn turn into urban fantasy. Okay,
oh,
so
sorry.
Laurel K. Hamilton is like the queen of that. Yes. We stopped reading when they just turned into porn, and we were like, where's the fantasy?
It's there. It's just
it's still there.
Fantasy.
It's just not
where's the story, actually? That's what we started questioning. But she is still categorized, I believe. I don't think she's categorized as paranormal romance. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I've seen in book people, from the last time I checked, I believe have like the first few of her books are actually shelved in science fiction fantasy,
right.
And then the rest of them are shelved elsewhere.
Well, that's because they're not PG anymore. Or even PG-13 or even R at a certain point. They just became X-rated novels, and that was fabulous. So it for people like me who really enjoy urban fantasy, it's difficult to walk into places like Barnes & Noble, which have crappy employees, not crappy employees necessarily, just crappy hiring policies. You walk into them and you're like, dude, would love an urban fantasy, but I want one with some romance in it. And you're stuck kind of going, okay, you know, switching from side to side of the shelf, you know, going, I'm desperate here. Come on, people. And it's difficult to parse it down. And that's actually honestly why one of the reasons that Amazon is useful in that context, because they at least have categorized it slightly further than, say, a Barnes & Noble has. They do separate out their science fiction and fantasy. You can scroll through both at the same time, but you can also choose to just look at one or the other. And without bookstores that and since you're looking at Amazon as the largest bookseller and urban fantasy is incredibly popular, if books like Stina's are not categorized as urban fantasy based on the fact that they took place during the 1970s as opposed to now, that could be a problem for her sales overall.
Yeah, because it does make it difficult to find.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that is kind of one of the issues in terms of the definition, why the definition can be so crucial, not necessarily from a who cares in terms of the philosophical perspective of the thing. I honestly don't care what most books are classified as, but in terms of the, you know, just pragmatic sales point of view, I think categories are important.
Yeah.
I think most people would agree with that. So, and that's where we get down to kind of the confusion of, well, okay, then what does make urban fantasy? And I think people are missing out because Sean and I have said that, at least I definitely have said that one of the reasons that I love A Blood and Honey is that for an incredibly long time, I was reading urban fantasy that I was just kind of getting sick of, you know. The Laurel K. Hamilton series, Charlene Harris, and whatever, the Kim Harrison novels, the very kind of held up there as the poster boys of urban fantasy. I've gotten sick of those, had lost interest in urban fantasy completely, and then read Stina's book. and was like, oh, this is what urban fantasy can be. It kind of rejuvenated my interest in it. And then I started trying to find similar books. Unfortunately, Charles Dillon let me down. but there are others out there.
Wow.
and I think that's why. But if
did,
I
did you read Holly Black? Been,
no,
did
I haven't.
Holly Black? You need to read Holly Black. Holly okay. Black.
But
go
I'm
there.
Writing it down. Done. So,
write it down.
But Hi. There, you know, unless I had been sent it or recommended it specifically, never would have known. And I think that's kind of a problem in terms of the advertising, I guess. Not necessarily for
well,
Stina.
But that's
overall.
A fairly common, that's part of books, the book yeah. experience. I mean, you have to admit some part aspect of it is finding this really great author that you enjoy so much and, you know, like Holly and sharing that with other people, proselytizing, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
that's part of the fun of it because, you know, I've got a secret. I know something really great and I want to share that with you. And that's part of being a reader.
It's also part of being a reviewer that wants to share the good books with people. Like, you want to read A Blood and Honey. Yes, there's some disturbing stuff early on, but and it might make you go squick, but it's really good. You really will like it. And another book for you, Jim C. Hines' Libero Monster. It's almost like a critique of urban fantasy in many ways, especially with the vampires.
Uh-huh.
Read it. You'll like it.
I'm totally – that's on my list to read too. Yeah.
All righty. So I think we've mined it pretty damn good. Does everyone else feel we – yeah, I think so.
Have we actually come to a definition?
Yeah, we just
Not
all agreed it's fine.
Yes, yes. Yes, my definition is the decay of a colossal wreck boundless and bare at this point.
We love you, Paul.
You attack the definition, not the man. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean...
Besides, I don't read as much urban fantasy as the three of you, so...
Well,
I'm willing to be wrong.
I'm not sure Sean reads any urban fantasy.
I've read some.
I probably reread... Well, I don't know how much Stina reads. I'm sure she reads quite a bit, but for about a 5-year period, it was all I read. So.
Yeah.
Sadly, my dad got addicted to it, and I relied on him for all the books because I couldn't afford books, so I just stole them from him.
Well,
oh,
you know,
poor
that's,
child.
That's another aspect of being a reader is borrowing yeah. from your friend. Note, I said friend, not 2,000 other friends. But anyway. Dun, dun, dun.
All right.
Don't steal books, people. There we go.
Yeah, no, don't steal books. That's not nice. Okay, so if anybody else wants to offer their personal definitions at the end of the
podcast. Stand up for Paul.
Sure, if you'd like to do that, yeah. At the end of the podcast, when we close out, there'll be all of our contact information. So if you want to like leave a comment or whatever, please do that and disagree with us or offer your own definition or of, I don't know, you could just talk about bunnies, I guess, if that's your prerogative. So.
Bunnies. They're scary, scary creatures.
They are. They're evil, right?
Oh, speaking of which, I finally watched Donnie Darko.
Yay! Yay! What did you think?
I don't know yet.
That's a common...
That is a common response, actually. I love it.
I couldn't decide if it was urban fantasy or science fiction, for instance.
Yeah.
No, it's science fiction.
Yes.
It's a time loop.
Yeah, time loop. It is a time loop, and I also believe that there's a puka.
Right, so it's urban fantasy science fiction.
Frank uh-huh. is a puka, if you ask me.
If you say so, crazy lady.
Yeah, I know, but he's like old school puka. He's scary and dark.
It was pretty awesome.
Cool. So, if you want to go check out Stina's stuff, where can they find it, Stina?
You can find it at Nightshade's site, Nightshade Books. You can find it at, of course, Barnes & Noble, and you can find it at Amazon. Book 2 and... No, book 1. Blood and Honey is actually on sale right now at Amazon, the ebook version, for $1.99.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'll plug that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can find it around everywhere. Yep, and then my personal website is cslicht.com.
So yeah, go check out all their stuff, buy both their books, or as I keep saying, anytime somebody doesn't do something I want them to do, I just do something bad to Paul.
And we don't want that.
No, we don't.
Well, you all don't, but I get sick pleasure out of it.
You're a terrible human being.
I am
Say
a terrible
goodbye,
human
Sean.
Being. And Paul, just real quick, tell people where they can find you.
They can find me as on Twitter as Prince J Vistin, PrinceJVistin. I have my own blog J Vistin Style. I do stuff for the Functional Nerds, for SF Signal, and well, for Skiffy and Fanti. So you can find me in all those places and more.
Yeah,
just
but
Google
you're,
me.
You're our bitch now. Just so you know.
Wow.
No comment.
Yeah, no, we take an ownership. We own 75% of your soul, stock in your soul.
Wow.
Yeah, we bought out. We own.
Which would be useful if we actually believed in souls.
This is true. This is a problematic. Anywho, so all right, guys. So yeah. So that does it. So whatever. I guess.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches. What?